Welcome back to the MLL podcast. My name is Kyle Devitt, and I am the Gear and Lifestyle Editor at Inside Lacrosse. I am joined, as always, by IL MLL writer Chris Rosenthal. Chris, what is good? We got one more week of the regular season left.
We do. Two games, or two teams are in, two spots are left. Every week is a good week in the world of Major League Lacrosse.
Yeah, I mean, like, unless you're one of the teams that loses. We have three teams up for those two other spots. But first, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to scenarios and all that stuff. But first, we're going to start where we always start, which is the weekend recap. Week 14 was wild. There were six games. And we're going to start with the Florida Launch 13, the Ohio Machine 12. This game had all sorts of controversy, a bench clearing, half-hearted brawl, horrible referee performances, clock issues. This was seriously like, I hate the MLL bingo on one card. But it was still kind of sick at the same time. You had some serious physicality on display from both teams. And, you know, credit Ohio for not laying down and for staying in it to duke it out, quite literally, with the Launch. What'd you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree, especially with that Ohio thing. You know, there's got to be kind of a hangover effect, you know, after last season, after the success and their kind of rise throughout the years. This year, so many things having gone wrong for them. You might think they could have come out in this game and, you know, maybe rolled over, maybe not given it all. But I think what it comes down to is just people generally hate losing and they hate being embarrassed. So, you know, you want to go down swinging. And they did that.
Yeah, I think really the key to the game was Austin Kalt making 23 saves, which he did twice this week, which is why he's our Maverick Power by the Player this week. That'll be up Friday on Inside Lacrosse. But yeah, I think that the Launch were kind of lucky to win a couple ways. But, you know, Ohio is testing some guys out for next year already. Bryce Wasserman looks really good. You know, the former Monmouth attackman fits in pretty well in the pro game. I believe he was on my big board for the MLL draft. I think we might see some stuff from him next year. But yeah, you know, the Florida just kind of leaning on their attackmen to get them through. And it worked in this game, but it didn't work at other times this season. And I think that's why they're missing out on the playoffs.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. It really seems to be that balance is something, you know, teams can't escape. You can have a really sort of top-heavy team, you know, where the attack's taking care of business week in and week out, and you're going to run into, you know, some bumps in the road. And, you know, eventually you're going to need a team that, you know, you're going to meet a team that can defend from both areas, and you're going to need, you know, midfield to match the efforts of the attack.
Absolutely. The next game we are going to talk about is the Atlanta Blaze 12, the Chesapeake Bayhawks 11. I got to be honest, I thought Chesapeake was going to come back and steal this one when they had a last-minute man up, but the fact that they couldn't even manufacture a good-looking cage, to me, means you deserve to lose. But I got to say, Atlanta is super fun to watch, man. They're all about mismatches and ball movement. They're the almost bizarro version of Denver, where Denver does that by kind of jamming it down your throat, and Atlanta just takes their time and picks a spot, and then you're done before you even know it. What'd you think about this game?
Yeah, what I think is really working for Atlanta right now is they're getting a lot of production from players that, you know, aren't necessarily the guys on the posters from, say, last season. You know, Kevin Rice, obviously, still producing. Scott Ratliff, I think he had a really big weekend as far as like ground ball play and things like that. But you get the additions that they've made this season, and you look at somebody like, I really think they're getting now exactly what they hoped and expected when they drafted Connor Kelly. You know, they're getting somebody who can, you know, go down to attack for a while, who can come out and play some midfield. You know, he can shoot from range. You know, he can hit a two-pointer, or he, you know, initiate from X. And if you have somebody like that, it's very dangerous in this situation. You know, if he faces off against, like, you know, a short stick and inverts, it's basically like a natural attackman going up against an overmatched short stick. They're getting a lot of options with him. Christian Cuccinello, we've been talking about him a lot the past couple of weeks. And, you know, he really kind of continued this sort of run he's been on especially since coming back from Israel, just risen to be a major, major player on this Atlanta offense.
Yeah, it's funny. I got kind of chirped out for Ratliff for putting Cuccinello at a midfield spot in our team of the week. And I'm like, dude, I'm sorry. Sometimes I just put attackmen as midfielders. And also, you clearly always switch to get him on a shorty. Like, we know. We know. But he is so effective attacking from different areas on the field. I think the balance that Atlanta has in terms of guys that can shoot from different places. I mean, Danny Ipe was great in this game again. You know, one of my Mikey Schlosser all-stars from earlier in the season. You know, guys that maybe you don't know the name of, but they're definitely producing. Are why Atlanta are big and kind of, I think, favorites to win and get a playoff spot when they play Denver this weekend. One last guy I want to bring up, Matt Abbott. Chris and I can't say enough about Matt Abbott. We are huge Matt Abbott fans. This was the Matt Abbott game. He did everything in this game. He played offense. He played defense. He stole the ball. He threw checks. He cleared the ball. He did everything possible that a human could do. And he did it all in like 4 minutes and like only took a break because his coach asked him to. I don't know what else you can expect out of a guy like that. But, you know, Matt Abbott, shout to you. Incredible performance here. He did not suit up in Chesapeake's other game, though, that we're going to talk about shortly. But, you know, any thoughts before we move on the legend?
Yeah, so I think when it's all said and done, Matt Abbott is one of the people whose name is going to be an adjective, which I think is just kind of reserved for a very, very slim percentage of even the best players. You know, you have to be really good and you have to be unique, you know, in years down the road. I mean, we do it now from time to time, but even more so when Matt Abbott isn't playing, we're going to say what people do is a Matt Abbott performance. So, you know, I mean, I think that's probably what you can best say about him. Just he plays like Matt Abbott.
Yeah,
which actually means something.
I'm not going to lie. One of my life goals is to be someone say, oh, he debited that. I don't know what it's going to be in reference to, but one day I'm going to figure it out. Probably something really sarcastic and unnecessary. All right, our next game, the Boston Cannons 14, the Charlotte Hounds 7. This was ugly, but not in the way that people, and by people, I mean us, predicted. Boston jumped all over Charlotte, due in large part to strong first half performances from Trevor Baptiste at the X and Nick Morocco in cage. One very important question I have for you and for Cannons fans, the answer is pivotal. Chris, are the best players on the Boston Cannons their first year faceoff man and their rookie goaltender who's played in like 4 games?
I am going to say, as of right this second, no. I don't think those are the best players. Next year, I think they might be the best. I think next year the best players in Cannons might be the second-year faceoff man and the now veteran goalie. But I can't take James Pennell out of the half Mount Rushmore. I've got to stick him in there right now just because he's leading the team in goals and assists and, of course, total points as well, just controlling so much of the offensive production. And I can't imagine, you know, how they would line up if he wasn't around. I would say it's Fennell and Morocco, the rookie goalie with the two starts under his name. Baptiste, I'm sure, will be much better next year. But, you know, this game, he was 17-24, and that got him above 50%. So I don't think he would say he's had an especially great, you know, debut, especially, you know, the kind of the pressure that he didn't ask for, but any pressure coming from, you know, your first overall pick faceoff man. But, you know, I think he's going to bounce back, especially after otherwise successful summer picking up a gold medal. But just to kind of get back to Nick Morocco there, how about his performance? Just stoning the Hounds left and right. And this is the thing that really, really sticks out to me as far as Nick Morocco goes. Just no fear whatsoever. I mean, so the first week we talked about this. kind of getting into some sort of verbal altercation of some kind that got under Joe Walter's skin enough for him to, you know, yell to the camera about it. So, I mean, he debuts talking trash to Joe Walters. And then the second week, he's just stoning everybody. And then he goes for like a full field clear himself and loses the ball and then lowers his shoulder to try to take out one of the hounds. Just clearly playing just completely fearless ball.
Yeah, that's Georgetown tough. And it's funny. We were putting in team of the week and I was just kind of sitting there going, I know Austin Cal crushed it. Like, I know he did. But I also knew Austin Cal could crush it. I didn't know Nick Morago could put up 21 saves as a rookie. And I think that was a huge difference. One other note on Baptiste, won a box indoor championship cup this week as well. To the point where it was surprising he played. Plays with a bunch of current Denver players, Denver University players, and, you know, guys that are former players as well, but won their indoor league in Colorado. So that was pretty cool. People were like, oh, you can't do that. I'm like, yeah, you can, because the contracts say, you know, you can't play field, which is why, you know, I'm up at Lake Placid this week. I'm not. I want everyone to know, if you're trying to sneak on and play with your team at Placid, I'm never the person that snitched on you. I want you to know that. I know that. I would never do that. I've seen you, and you haven't seen me. But I want you to know that I've never done that. Going back to this game real quick before we move on, I think Charlotte, if you're looking at the season as a whole, I think that they hit the wall at exactly the wrong time. And that's when everyone got their box guys back. And, you know, it's kind of like the Kyle Lowry effect, where he tries so hard and he's so good early in the season in the NBA. And then the playoffs come and it's like, he's still trying really hard and he's still good, but all these other dudes have a different gear. And I think that Charlotte hit that gear either too early or never found it and only was in third and everyone else was in second. And that's how they got to their early season success. I thought they might have bounced back after last week, but guess not. Too bad for them and their fans. Excellent collection of players, though. Hopefully they'll add some more playmakers in the offseason. Our next game is the Atlanta Blaze 16, the Florida Launch 13. The Florida midfield, again, we mentioned earlier, I think it cost them big. This is a game they needed, and now they're out. And I think after that resurgence against Ohio on Thursday, I thought this would be a return to form to the Launch, maybe get them back in the playoffs with some tiebreakers. But it was not to be. You know, you can't win the MLL when you're attacked as 80% of your scoring. You can't do it. On the other side, this was I've kind of been on the fence with Atlanta, and I've been pretty public about that, especially here on the podcast. This is the first real complete performance from Atlanta. From the offense to defense to transition, it was scary. And I think the Blaze might be doing the opposite of what Charlotte did and putting it all together at just the right time for the playoffs. What do you think?
Yeah, however much stock you put into the concept or the notion of momentum existing like as a team as a whole, if you 100% subscribe to it, if you think it's, you know, all in our heads or whatever, you can't really deny that Atlanta seems to be solving their problems and putting things together little by little as the season has progressed. And, you know, like you see them taking on the Launch, and it just really seems to be that the Blaze have, you know, they've figured out, it never seemed like, you know, even when the season was starting, it never seemed like, oh, this team is terrible. You know, it was never like a joke of a team or anything like that. But it seems that they have steadily made notes. They've tinkered with their roster a little bit here and there, you know, made a couple moves, couple different position responsibilities, and it seems to be working. So they do seem like a very dangerous squad that seems to have resolved a lot of its issues. And like you said, exactly at the right time.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Just that they've had so many different lineups, but only like slightly, like they plug a guy in and see if he works. And I think at times they've given up on guys a little too early and like rush to plug other guys in that weren't ready. And that's kind of where they've lost games because the chemistry was a little bit off, but they have it now. You know, Connor Kelly's back. He started notoriously slow and was, you know, still hobbled from his college season with Maryland. But I think you're absolutely right. You know, you talked about it earlier. He's kind of one of the keys to their development on offense. And it's mea culpa time for me. Joe Nardella went 26 for 32 here. 17 ground balls. My dude, you are worth a first round pick. I was wrong. I said it twice. It didn't really hurt because truth doesn't hurt. It's just true. So good looks from him and the Blaze going forward. Hopefully they'll make their first ever franchise playoff appearance if they get a win this weekend. Our next game is the Chesapeake Bayhawks 13, the Denver Outlaws 11. I didn't see a lot of this one. I know that Chesapeake changed their lineup a bit. So I'm going to let you kind of do this initial recap.
So basically, what you need to know is the first half was essentially just a one-sided affair. Chesapeake just kind of, you know, they both kind of started off a little sloppy. I think both teams could admit that. But Chesapeake got it together earlier, and then they started kind of dominating in all aspects of the game, you know, generating points from things like long stick midfield transition, substitution advantages, you know, like the little things like that, in addition to solid play from guys like Josh Byrne and Lyle Thompson, you know, kind of shifting the focus to the, you know, box style attack sort of play. And in addition, Steele Stanwyck kind of taking on not so much falling in love with the quarterback and X kind of role. They're moving Stanwyck around a lot. And, you know, he had like some finisher goals, you know, like off ball crease kind of stuff, working really well with guys like Bernard Thompson. So yeah, long story short, Chesapeake led 11-4 heading into the fourth quarter. You know, the final makes it look like maybe had, you know, kind of a back and forth thing, but Chesapeake, you know, controlled it for a good 75% of it there. Denver started chipping away at the lead later, but never quite got back there. So that being said, and, you know, especially what we were just talking about with Atlanta coming on strong, Denver's heading into this weekend, and, you know, we'll get to the preview part later, but Chris Kluche's been out with an injury of some sort. I assume he's still going to be out after limping off the field a couple weeks back. And, you know, Kelly not in goal. Denver has been seriously challenged these past couple of weeks. Do you see bouncing back, and how do you think they do it, if you do?
I think they have the capability to do it simply because their midfield is so diverse, and I don't think we've seen Romar Dennis's best game yet, and I think he's got like an 8-point game in him. At some point, it's going to happen. I feel it. I know that it's coming. His shots are getting more and more accurate as the season goes on. You know, Mikey Schlosser, I think maybe we have seen his best game, but I think that he can still put up 5 points. And if those two are able to get around Atlanta's short six, which I'm going to be honest, if Atlanta has a weakness, it's short stick defense and drawing penalties. And Denver eats up man-ups. They eat up EMO. So I think that that's how they do it if they do it. But I would not want to be playing Atlanta without my starting keeper and my best rookie ever. That's not a position of strength to bargain from. So, yeah, as good as Atlanta is, Denver is still very dangerous. But they are going up against a really hot team in the Blaze.
Yeah.
Our next game is the New York Lizards 13, the Dallas Rattlers 12. This was a fun one. You know, Dallas rested Jordan Wolfe and Ben Reeves. And listen, you can say that cost them a W. But did it win them the war? I thought the Rattlers' last three possessions, all ending in turnovers, were worrisome at the very least, and borderline pathetic at the worst. The New York defense continued their ascendance, closed out their second game in a row. But I got to say, fool me once, shame on you. Fool Fool me twice, shame on me. I can't forget the other 8 to 10 games, but I think I might be learning to forgive them. What did you make of New York's win here?
Yeah, touching on a couple things you mentioned, you know, the end of the game for the Rattlers. So their final 5 minutes of play, one shot, four turnovers.
So bad.
That's not great. Yeah, it's not great. I think part of what that could be accounted to, as obvious as this may seem, is not having Jordan Wolfe out there. Is when I'm watching the game, what I was thinking about this was Jordan Wolfe is kind of like, I think I've made a similar analogy before. He's kind of like a 104 mile an hour fastball. And if you don't have that card, you have to kind of figure it out along the way. And, you know, Dallas needed to do something late in the game, but they didn't really, they didn't have that other answer. You know, they couldn't give it to the guy who is going to instantly draw a slide and help everybody else out. They just couldn't get it done in another way. That being said, and like what you were just discussing about New York defense, I want to send a shout out to Austin Pofani, heavily scrutinized member of a heavily scrutinized defensive line, showed steady improvement again. Zach Greer caused a turnover on him with 3:28 to go. You know, just a clean strip, and you know, and like you were saying, you know, if we've been pointing out bad stuff, you know, we should point out some good stuff too. So nice work by the Lizards defense. Dallas had had some execution problems there, but really though, it's going to be different the next time they play. So I think like last week when we were looking at the Lizards win, it really just comes down to the fact that they won, and you know, that's all they needed to do. You know, if these teams meet up again, I'm not going to take a lot from this game and apply it to the next game as far as, you know, who knows what's happening. It's going to be so many roster changes and moves made and all that. So the win was the thing that matters.
Well, it's funny you bring up Austin Pofani. This is kind of a, I don't know if it's an embarrassing story. It's just a story. He will be suspended this week because he took a photo of him fake peeing on the Dallas Cowboys star, and the league suspended him for one game. He didn't actually do it. It was a water bottle. It's pretty clear. Is it dumb or is it harmless to suspend him? Because I'm of two minds on it. What do you think?
So I gotta say this, apologies to the Rattlers organization, but as a DC sports fan, I firmly stand behind anyone taking pictures of peeing on the star, fake or otherwise. I have no objections to that. Anybody who wants to do that, go ahead and do it. I will never go against someone who wants to desecrate the Dallas star. That being said, it seems like I didn't know about this until you told me. So I'm guessing maybe it wasn't a super, super huge thing. I mean, I didn't see it at all. So I think maybe the suspension itself might draw more attention to the actual incident. In that case, it seems like it's going to be worse than it could have been. You know, maybe some sort of just talking to him or something about it, you know, send out a memo to the league. It does seem that, you know, the new powers that be in the MLL have kind of wanted to issue a tone that like, hey, we're not playing around. This is very, very serious professional affairs, you know, take things seriously. So I guess maybe that's kind of where it comes from as far as the explanation. So, you know, a similar sort of thing with his old teammate, Ryan Flanagan, where they were like, you know, listen, we're laying down the law. And, you know, maybe the commissioner just wanted to remind everybody that, you know, you can't mess around.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm of two minds. One, I don't care. I have no allegiance to Dallas or anything like that. I think it's dumb and immature. But at the same time, like this, that's what would happen in a real pro league, which is why I think they're doing it. But I don't even think you can call the MLL real pro league if you're paying dudes like 10 G's to play for a whole season. Like, really? You're going to take this dude's paycheck for a week because he did that? That's dumb. You should just have him take down the picture and issue an apology or something. And you know what? We're not making it any better by talking about it. So, sorry, but it's something I wanted to talk about because, I mean, check yourself. MLL, front office, my dudes, we're getting to a much better place. Thank you very much. I appreciate all the overtures. I've made them too. Also, shout to Inside the Cross publisher Terry Foy for setting up a detente between all of us. It's worked out really well. I don't know, man. I get it, but at the same time, it's a players' league. It's not your league, dude. It's not. I'm sorry. It just isn't. All right. That's enough before I get in trouble. Let's move on to the playoff picture. In first place, unable to be moved, the Dallas Rattlers, locked home field, number one seed no matter what. Number two, Chesapeake Bayhawks, locked home field no matter what. Okay, so Dallas is hosting someone, Chesapeake is hosting someone. The three remaining teams are all at 7-6. They are in order right now before games are played: Denver, Atlanta, and New York. So I asked for the most simplistic playoff synopsis from the league office. This is literally from them verbatim. The Denver-Atlanta game is a win and in scenario. Denver can still win with a loss and get in, but needs help. Atlanta would be out with a loss. Denver is only eliminated with a loss and a New York win. New York is only eliminated with a loss and an Atlanta win. Atlanta is only in with a win. So the team with the most to lose here by losing is Atlanta, because Denver and New York can still get in if they lose. Hopefully they don't, but if one team loses, they will be the fourth, and if the other team wins, they'll be the third. That's the easiest way to describe it. Otherwise, we're going into a ton of tiebreaker scenarios. So, in essence, the most important game of the weekend to immediately determine which of these three teams makes the playoffs is Atlanta and Denver. And the easiest way to suss it out is if Denver wins, they're in. They'll probably get the third spot because they have tiebreakers, and Atlanta will definitely be out. And that will put New York at four. That's the most, the clearest way I can put it to you guys. Chris, what do you make of these scenarios? What do you think is the best matchup for everybody? Fan-wise, not everybody, because people are going to differ in their opinions, but what's going to make the best game in the first round of the playoffs?
Let's see. So that is a tricky question here. So now in this scenario, who is out? We'll start with that. So, like, give me a team hypothetically out.
Let's say Atlanta's out.
Okay, Atlanta's out. I think, you know, I don't know if New York, you know, a lot's going to be determined. This might already be an obsolete statement by this time next week. But I'm not sure if New York is going to want to see Dallas.
No, they don't. No. No way.
Yeah. Right. Even, especially, I think their win this past week, you know, we mentioned Reeves and Wolf being gone, but I feel like they cashed in on a lot of things that Dallas will probably go back to the film room and work to eliminate if they see them again. Just a lot of transition play that Dallas would probably try to slough out the next time. You know, Kyle Hartzell scoring two goals is probably something that they will, you know, address, you know, making sure that they're picking up, you know, cutters in all situations. And it's also something that you can't count on. You can't count on a long stick scoring two goals a game.
Right.
You know, so in that sort of situation, I feel like New York might be pleased that they knocked them out when they did, and then maybe want another matchup in the first round.
Yeah, I think for me, the matchup I want to see is either Dallas versus Atlanta or Dallas versus Denver and Chesapeake versus New York, no matter what. I want to see it. I want to see it so badly. I think it'd be awesome. I think it's great. I would love to see that. But I think Dallas versus Denver is probably the most fun option for everyone watching because both those teams are so dangerous on offense. And I think Chesapeake, New York is going to be like a defensive battle where Chesapeake just tries to control it. And Atlanta, Dallas, or Atlanta, Chesapeake would really come down to who can cash in on, you know, the intangibles, like you were saying, transition play, extra man, who can make stops on man down, and which goalie plays better. I really think it comes down to like those very simple things, you know. And it's funny because all these teams have weaknesses. I would think at this point in the season, Chesapeake's main weakness is their faceoff unit, and their strength is their defense. With Dallas, I think their strength is obviously their offense and ability to control the game and the tempo of the game. Their weakness is definitely transition, especially if you watch last week's tape. It was atrocious. And they have a tendency to stall out. I think Denver, you know, we've seen Denver screw up a lot when they've had leads. That's not a good sign. That's their weakness, but their strength is – there are so many strengths because their faceoff play, their transition play, their defense, it's all very well-rounded. Atlanta's strength, I think, is, you know, the heat that they're playing with right now. It's they're the hottest team in the league. Say what you want. I think they're a little tight. If I'm going to pick a weakness, I think they're a little tight, and it does mean so much to them. You can tell – even if you go on social media, you can see – how much interaction that their Twitter account has with other teams' Twitter accounts and also their fans. So I think that's good, but I think it's also a sign of like maybe it means a little bit too much. And New York is like, listen, you've got all these guys that should be winning championships every year. And they haven't for a couple years.
Right.
What's their next? Do they have that gear? Do they have championship gear? That's the question. Everything else is not within doubt. Especially the trade for Tommy Kelly has helped them out. The defense, as I said before, looks better. But fool me once, all that trite stuff. So, yeah, I think it's a really interesting blend of the playoffs. I think, you know, you have to look at the teams that have locked home field as the favorites, no matter what. No matter what. But one of the guys who's going to try and help get his team into the playoffs is Denver attackman Eric Law, and here is our interview with him. Come ready now. I'd like to welcome to the podcast for the first time this year. He was on last year, Denver Outlaws attackman Eric Law. Eric, what's up, man?
Nothing. How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me on.
It's doing great. I wanted to start you out with a pretty important question that I feel like maybe people that aren't big fans of the MLL aren't ready for, but this is how I feel. So last year you tied for most points in the league with Baum. This year you're in the top five. Are you the most underrated attackman in lacrosse? Because I think you are. It's okay if you say yes or no.
No, I don't think I'm the most underrated because I still think that there's a couple guys, even on my team, that are even more underrated. I think Matt Cavanaugh doesn't get nearly enough credit as he should for what he does. Game in and game out, and what he does to specifically to defensemen and dodging on them. So I'd tip my cap his way, and there's still a lot of guys I think are underappreciated in this league, but I definitely think there's other guys that are more undervalued than I am.
Now, speaking of Denver attacking, you've played alongside John Grant Jr. as a teammate, and now you're playing kind of for him as your assistant coach. So what's the difference between teammate Junior and coach Junior, and how do you feel that he's helped your game?
Oh, man. Junior has helped my game out so much. Even when the first time I ever played with him, for the first practice, he's taught me so many different things about the MLL and just little different aspects of my game that I could steal from his to take over to my game. And he's he's definitely helped him become a much better shooter and a much better finisher. Player Junior and Coach Junior are two different people. I think Coach Junior is much more intense, and he takes it very, very serious, and he's all about winning. And not that he wasn't when he's a player, but when he's a coach, he's all serious all the time. And when he was playing with us, you know, he was just another teammate that liked to goof around and have a good time. And Junior will admit that he was never the biggest fan of practice and warm-ups and anything like that. He just wanted to get to the games. But so I think that's probably, if I had to pick, the biggest differences. He takes practices and shoot-arounds and all the little things much more serious now as a coach than he did as a player. But me and him, I'm so thankful for the relationship that we have and that we build as players, and now it's taken over him as a coach. And you know, we bounce ideas off each other all the time, and we definitely have an open communication during the game and continue to work with each other. And he's continuing to build my game as much as he can give me.
You're an attackman known for always being in the right place at the right time. What's one tip you can give to attackmen of all levels that can kind of help them anticipate action before it happens and be in the right place?
Yeah, I was thankful I had some great coaches growing up, and one actually told me, if you're standing in the same spot for more than 2 seconds on the field, you're doing something wrong. And that kind of stuck with me all throughout high school and all throughout college, that whenever I was on the field, I should be constantly moving and never standing still in one spot for too long, and never let the defense really get set. So whenever my defenseman turns his head or anything, I just try to be a little bit somewhere else, just so that they maybe have to worry about me a little bit more and less about the play. And then if they're staring at the ball too long, just try to cut and get open for my teammates. But I'd say the easiest one to give is, if you're standing still for more than 2 seconds, then you got to move and you got to be somewhere else.
Cool. So obviously you got a huge game coming up this weekend. You guys are heading to Atlanta. If you win, you secure a spot into the postseason. What do you think you personally need to focus on to get the win?
Oh, that's a good question. Personally for me, I think trying to be the quarterback of the offense, playing that guy from behind, just trying to keep everything going to flow. I think before the World Games, we were in an excellent spot of we were a very dangerous team of we were attacking from behind, attacking from up top, and in a bunch of different spots. And then I think the last 2 weeks against Dallas and against Chesapeake, I think we kind of got away from that a little bit and didn't work as well on the offensive end together and really and do the things that we need to do to make some easy plays happen. So getting back to it this week is going to be very important. I mean, Atlanta's coming in. They're extremely hot. They've got a great defense. They got a great close defense, some big, strong guys. And then Gittleman's as good as anyone in this league. So for me, it's going to be about making sure guys are in the right spot and just trying to stay as calm, cool, collected as we can throughout the game and kind of stay even keel. I mean, there's going to be times that game's going to be kind of chaotic. So the more that we can stay calm and stick to our game plan and our systems, I think we'll put ourselves in a good spot to be headed to the playoffs at the end of the game.
All right, getting down to our questions we ask most of our guests, if not all of them. What stick do you use and who strings it?
In the MLL, I'm using a Evo 4, the High School 1, with a string king shaft, and I actually do string all of my own sticks. I have kind of a unique style that I do it, and just have kind of always strung my sticks that way and kind of stuck with it. But people always tell me they think I have the ugliest sticks in the league, but hey, it's worked for me, so I'm just gonna keep it going that way. But the stick I would prefer, the stick I always use during the summer whenever I'm doing any coaching or hanging out, is the Under Armour Charge 2, the new head that just came out with some East Coast Dyes mesh. It's a great new stick that just came out, and I reckon for a player of any ages, of any skill level, can really love that stick.
What is the what's the last great movie you saw, and what is the worst movie you remember seeing?
Oh, the worst movie I just saw, because it just came up on, and I just watched it a couple nights ago, it was Aloha. Top worst movie I think I've ever seen. It had no plot. It was just bad. And I don't recommend it to anyone. So if it ever pops up, even if you're on a flight, don't watch it. Best movie I just recently watched would have to be The Town. I'm a huge fan of that movie, and it was on. And it's one of those movies for me that if it's ever on TV, I'm going to sit down and watch it no matter what's going on. And huge fan of Ben Affleck in that movie. And and that always gets me jacked up.
Yeah, Rosie and I are always, whose car are we going to take anytime we do something? So it's definitely a pop the trunk moment. Who is your favorite sports athlete, team sports athlete, and who is your favorite individual sports athlete?
Favorite team sports athlete would be Von Miller. Being a Broncos fan, big Bronco, big Denver guy, Colorado guy, homegrown, Von Miller, he's kind of the whole life of the party here in Denver. And just to watch what he does, game, I mean, pretty impressive. So, and you got to love his celebrations. It's tough not to love that guy. Favorite individual athlete? That's a tough one to say, but I'd probably say Steph Curry. I love watching him play. I know he gets a lot of grief from a lot of other people, but I love watching him play just because of the way he can do a little bit of everything. He can dribble ball. He's underrated as a dribbler and kind of a dasher into the hoop, but then also the way that he can just absolutely stroke the ball. And you can tell of how much hard work he's really put into his game, and he just works so hard that I respect his game so much.
Let's see. So finally, where can everybody follow you on social media? And can you please recommend a song for our summer MLL playlist?
Yeah, everyone can find me at Instagram at elaw_15. That's the same for my Twitter account. And then a song that I'm going to suggest is going to be a big time throwback, but is going to be Hook by the Blues Traveler.
Wow. Very nice. Wow. That one struck some chords.
Gotta go back to the classics.
Wow. Okay. All right.
Or I'll throw in another song in there too that is a big one for me and Mike Slosher. We're big fans of this song. Is Paradise by the Dashboard Light by Meatloaf.
Okay.
Another great locker room song.
Wow. Chris, I feel like you're sticking your language. I feel like you're on the same wavelength there.
Yeah.
He definitely tackled some eras I don't think any of the other players had taken care of for us. So those are very, very good suggestions.
I always have to throw in a little bit of something different. I know some of those other guys probably go on all those top hits right now.
Right.
Yeah, no, nice one. It was great. Eric, thanks for joining us, and good luck this weekend against Atlanta. Hopefully we'll see you in the playoffs.
All right, thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. Take care.
All right, Elaw coming in hot with a bad movie. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's great to hear somebody with a passion for just like warning everyone to avoid a movie. You know, he's doing a very noble service there.
I think the only two players that have said movies are bad are him and Kyle Harrison, right? All season?
I think so. I think so. I think people are generally pretty pleased with the movies that they decide to watch. So, you know, you get these ones. It's in like weird situations, like, you know, oh, I was on a plane or you know, I was, you know, in a hotel or, you know, some sort of situation presented itself where I was like, yeah, okay, I guess I'll watch it. And that's how you get stuck watching a garbage movie.
Yeah. Or the I'm not a movie guy. And it's just like, oh, God. Okay. All right, bro. Okay. One thing I've neglected to mention earlier, Max Seabold and Mitch Belisle have announced that they are set to retire at the end of the season. What are your thoughts on these two Cornell greats and the end of their pro careers?
You know, I mean, it's obviously sad to see them go. I think they've both kind of been, you know, major figures for, you know, the Boston Cannons. You know, obviously Siebel got there a few years back with a very famous trade, you know, perhaps the most famous, at least at the time. You know, they've both kind of etched their names in Cannon's history, especially Max Seabold. His, you know, recent performance, I think the way he's been playing the game his entire career and, you know, just as much lately is kind of how you would want other people to play it. He's clearly been physical. He's clearly tried to impose his will. He, you know, I'm unable to avoid the cliche, but he clearly leaves it all out there. You know, it's the guy, he will, if he's open for two, he's going to shoot some twos. If he's heating up, he's going to shoot some more twos. If he wants to put his shoulder into somebody, he's going to put his shoulder into somebody. He's just been a dominant physical presence who appeared to give it all the time. And Mitch Belisle has been just a one of the things I'd say in this league that people struggle with filling a defense is just consistency and reliability. And, you know, once Belisle came over from his indoor commitments, he was somebody who they could just kind of pencil in there and feel comfortable. And I think that's something that teams really, really miss, that they don't think about a lot. But not having to worry about somebody on the defensive end is priceless. And, you know, they're going to have to worry about somebody filling in on Belisle's shoes.
Yeah, I think the best thing I can say about both these players is that they're both what I call brick wall guys, in that they'll run through a brick wall for you if they're on your team. Like, they're great teammate guys, great locker room guys. From everything I've heard, every story I've heard from locker room stuff is positive. And I don't know how many players I can say that about, because I hear a lot of not positive stuff about certain guys. But I've never heard a bad word about either one of these guys ever. I've met them both. They're both very nice people. They don't, you know, Seabold's actually pretty funny. You know, I think that it's funny. I think if their careers, if they were on different teams, I think they'd have different careers. Does that make sense? I feel like Mitch Belisle would have fit right in with that Ohio Machine unit last year. I think Max Seabold, if he stayed with Denver and wasn't injured a lot earlier in his career, might have, you know, there was a time where Max Seabold was considered the best player in lacrosse ever. Like, he's, like, at the time, he was considered one of the best to play midfield, all aspects. And the thing is, he never lost that athleticism. It's just the, you know, injuries held him back. With Belisle, you know, I mean, he's definitely, like you said, he's a cornerstone defense guy. You need a guy like Belisle on your defense for your defense to be good. But you also need people to support him and to maybe take matchups that he doesn't like to take. You know, famously, he always guarded John Grant Jr. And, you know, everybody hate, you know, we hated watching it because it was like watching two Rams smash into each other. There wasn't a lot of finesse going on there, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I think they're both going to have, like you said, you know, in the end, historic careers as members of the Cadence, and also contributing positive personalities to Major League Lacrosse. So, you know, I wish them all the best of luck. Hopefully all the Cadence fans show out for them and, you know, give them the love that they deserve in their final game this weekend. We're going to move on to our recommendation of the week. I'm going to go first. Man, we've talked about this before. I love Tom Cruise. I do. I'm sorry. I know he's probably like not a good person. I get that. I understand. But man, if I don't love me some Tom Cruise movies. Oh, I saw the recommendation is Mission Impossible Fallout. Who knew that the greatest spy movie series would be based on a cheesy TV show and starring Tom Cruise? I'm going to lie. I'd be lying if I said I knew that, but now I know it to be true. It's better than Bond, people. Go look back at those Bonds. They do not hold up, friends. Not some of them downright not at all, and are wildly offensive and should not be watched by normal people. That's how bad they are. So, Mission Impossible Fallout in theaters now. I highly recommend it. Going unspoiled. I'm not gonna ruin anything for you. I think it's a great action movie. It's my second favorite movie of the summer behind Infinity War, which is still, I've never watched a movie where I've been like gasping as much. Not for air, but just from things that happen. And I'm not going to spoil that either, because that's coming out on Blu-ray, DVD, and all that stuff like this week. So go pick that up. And also make time to go see this. It's a little long, if I'm going to complain. I don't mean to complain, because it's well-earned. The thing about the Mission Impossible movies is that there's always a set piece that just is insane. And unfortunately, they put that set piece usually earlier in the movie. Let me tell you something, friends. That set piece is the very end of this movie, and it is unreal. So go check out Mission Impossible Fallout starring Tom Cruise. Chris, what's your recommendation of the week?
My recommendation of the week, I'm going to announce that I'm actually going to cheat, and I'm going to give a tiny recommendation and then an actual recommendation. Quick recommendation, I think everybody should go to theringer.com because their staff got together and wrote an article called The 100 Best TV Episodes of the Century, and that is 100 shows, the best episode of each show. And that's from, you know, Mad Men, Sopranos, Dawson's Creek, Price is Right, like everything. 100 TV shows. That's 100 shows is a lot of shows. So pretty much anything is up there. So I recommend checking that out. Second recommendation, I think this is the second time I've done this. New flavor, though. New Oreo drop last week. Rocky Road Trip flavor for Oreos. Can't recommend them enough. Basically what that is it's like Rocky Road, but in Oreo form. So if you like Rocky Road ice cream and you like Oreos, then you're probably already sold on the concept. It's a chocolate cookie, chocolate cream with a marshmallow hint inside of it because of the Rocky Road. And instead of like almond slivers or whatever, they have this, it's called like a soy nut inclusion. It basically gives you like the crunchiness or whatever that the nuts would without, you know, hurting kids with nut allergies and stuff like that. So it is thoughtful and delicious, and I would recommend you pick up a pack today and make your life a little bit better.
I think we can all agree that the Oreo is the Tom Cruise of cookies.
I can absolutely agree with that.
All right. I thought you were going to trip me up there, but thanks for agreeing with me. All right. We're going to go on to our most important weekend preview, because it's going to determine our thoughts on teams that might make the playoffs. We're going to start out with Boston versus Ohio. My note here says toilet bowl, but that has to be a mistake. It's not. This game only has significance to determine who gets the number one pick in next year's draft. And I think that's going to be Patrick Spencer. Even if he decides to use a fifth year and play basketball, he'll get selected number one, especially if it's Ohio, because we all know Ohio loves number one picks. Chris, do you have any thoughts on this game? Because I do not.
I guess real quick, I'll say that I'm looking forward to this more now than I was like a week ago at this time because of Boston's performance. So, you know, good goalie play, and you know, they looked better last week. So, yep, other than that, nope, we can keep moving.
Yeah, and Cannons fans, listen, show out for Mitch Belisle and Max Seabold, two guys who really gave it all on the field in the Cannons uniform. Can't say that about every player. Next game, New York versus Chesapeake. The Lizards have to get the biggest victory of their season against the franchise that they have the most history with. I know they hate Boston, but Boston hates them more than they care about the Cannons. Like, ask a Cannons fan. I feel like it's not that deep of a hate from the New York side. But Chesapeake, man, that's some regional disgust, right? We're going to get some real hit-me-first fights in the parking lot if the wrong guys drink a few too many soda pops. I love that this game is the determining factor for playoff seeding out of one other game. Chesapeake doesn't have a lot of skin here, you know, doesn't have a lot to play for. But because it's New York, I expect them to be dialed all the way up. There's just too much history here. What do you think?
I absolutely agree. The concept, of course, you know, it's like, so New York, they're going to be fueled by, oh, you know, if we win, we can be in the playoffs, you know, and you don't have to worry about anybody else's help. You know, so obviously it's come together and blah, blah, blah. But Chesapeake, they've already secured, but they get to possibly keep New York from getting to the playoffs. And I don't know how petty the collective Bayhawks organization is, but I would think that pettiness should be enough to fuel them just as much as New York's drive for success would be. Because, I mean, how great would it be
if you are a Chesapeake Bay Hawk, to prevent any sort of New York success.
I mean, I think the older players are like that. I'm sure Cottle would love that. But did you see their locker room celebration when they clinched? Did you see that video? I think they're still in the locker room.
So glad you brought that up.
Oh, my God. Can we get a grade on the dance moves for each player? Go.
Okay. So I'm going to start with an incomplete for Colin Heacock, because I did not know it was Colin Heacock until they kind of posted a clip of him later and tagged him in it. He just took his shirt and flipped it over his head and kind of started backing it up. I don't know if it's a – I feel like I needed a side shot to officially declare it a twerk, but it was definitely a shirt overhead backing it up. I don't know if that's the move where you start with. That seems like the end, right?
It might
like
be the only the movie he has. You don't know. It might be the only movie he has.
Maybe. So I'm going to give him an incomplete. Miles Jones, I think we've seen Miles Jones dancing, but he didn't do much dancing in that clip. He was just kind of throwing his arms around and celebrating. But he did have kind of like Ultimate Warrior arm tassels on.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering, did he play the entire game with Ultimate Warrior arm tassels, like under his gear? Or did he put that on when he was shirtless after the game? Like, what is the more reasonable of the two possibilities?
They're both great. There's no wrong answer. But I mean, listen, we're just, this is all preamble. Because we're getting to the star of the video. And I'm going to let you do it. Go.
Okay. Hands down, star of the video. So like I said, Heacock got an incomplete. Josh Byrne. Yep. Josh Byrne got an A++. And not only does he get an A++, but I got something for here. I am going to call myself a Josh Byrne birther. I need to see some sort of birth certificate because I need to know where he's actually from and how old he really is, because he dances like his birth certificate should say, like, from around the block. And he was born in, like, 86 or something like that. Because he's got, like, Running Man on top of Running Man, like Roger Rabbit side move to a Millie Rock, just bridging the generations together. Just solid, solid, like, Dance Dance Revolution, if it's, like, an updated version. I don't know... You know, maybe this is what British Columbia is like. Maybe I am being narrow-minded. I did not know. I assumed these were strictly domestic moves. But Josh Byrne just has moves on top of moves, and I applaud him. Standing ovation. A++.
Yeah, I think the only commentary I have on that is that in the age of YouTube, you can learn how to do anything. And also, it gets really cold in Canada, so they run out of stuff to do. And I think just learning how to dance might be one of those things. That's all.
That is amazing if that is true. If they're just like, what do we do tonight, boys? It's like, oh, we could load up a Millie Rock tutorial, and they just do that.
Yeah, the internet's a wonderful place, man. All right, our next game. Also wildly important and maybe the most important in terms of a win and get in scenario, the Atlanta Blaze versus the Denver Outlaws. It is win and get in for the Blaze. And for Denver, it's win and secure game versus Chesapeake and maybe risk being eliminated if New York wins. I don't know. I think, again, we've said this before, Atlanta is hot and Denver is still recovering from their injury problems. I think this game will be low scoring because both teams will try and control it a little too much. We're going to see a lot of 6-on-6 stuff. And teams, I don't think either team's going to take a lot of chances here. But I think the team that succeeds and executes in the few risks that they do take is the team that's going to win. What are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, so I think the question is, can Atlanta maintain a little bit longer? You know, you never know when the Rocket's going to run out of fuel. So the question is, can they maintain and can Denver kind of turn things around?
I think the Outlaws are going to kind of come out with a lot of two-man play. That's kind of what broke things through when they were really, really suffering against Chesapeake. They kind of went back to their, you know, bread and butter, you know, draw some guys up top, have players like, you know, Berg and Currier, work some of the two-man box stuff, get some mismatches. So I think that might be something they tried to do in this one. You know, especially like Eric Law mentioned, there's a lot of physical close defense that might give people trouble down there. So they might be able to cash in on a top-down sort of two-man play. And Atlanta, just, yeah, like, I mean, you've been saying it. They're just getting better and better. You know, you just have to wonder if they can keep up the pace and continue to improve. But obviously, biggest game of the weekend, you know, they have to win. Denver doesn't have to win necessarily, but they definitely should treat this like they have to win. I think, you know, obviously this is one I'm most looking forward to. I cannot wait for this one.
Yeah, definitely. This is a live tweet at the time, as long as I don't have a game in Placid candidate, for sure. Our final game of the regular season is the Dallas Rattlers versus the Florida Lunch. I mean, does it matter? No, not really. I think for Florida, I think it gives them an opportunity to finish on a high note. But otherwise, you know, not much else. A win actually hurts them because it hurts their draft position next year. For Dallas, I think this is an opportunity to rest more guys and, you know, try to see who's more focused on the postseason. And Florida, I don't know what their motivation is. I really don't. Maybe for each other. Maybe it's a good, you know, character test for them going forward, but I don't know. I just think Dallas is so much more focused on the postseason than the end of the regular season, right?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. So, I mean, they've already locked up the top spot. They've already locked up home field advantage. I mean, last week they lost at home, so they're not going to finish undefeated at home. You know, I mean, if they were sitting guys last week, you know, I mean, it makes sense, you know, if you wanted to sit Wolf after Israel, you know, maybe he's a little banged up or something. But if you're going to sit guys against New York that was fighting, it certainly seems reasonable that you'll do the same against the Florida team that is no longer competing for, you know, any sort of spot in this year's postseason. So, yeah, it's a team that doesn't have a lot to gain versus a team that doesn't really have a lot going either way right now after the losses. So, yeah, it's kind of like the opposite of the Atlanta-Denver game. It's a little tougher to get up for this one. But I will say, you know, the individuals who are on the field, like we were saying about Ohio, you know, I assume they're going to compete just because, you know, losing sucks for everybody. So I still assume the people out there will fight. But in grand picture, it's not really that – not really moving the needle that much.
Yeah, it's not really a spicy matchup. All right, we're going to close out like we always close out with our MVP of the week. Chris, who is your MVP?
My MVP of the week is LeBron James of the Los Angeles Lakers, as weird as that feels to think and say. Obviously not for playing basketball. Because the season's over, and I actually don't think ever actually rooted for LeBron James playing basketball. He ruined a lot of DC seasons when we weren't terrible before. Gilbert Arenas brought some guns in the locker room, and everything fell apart. But that being said, so as you may know, LeBron opened up a school this week, which is crazy big news because people don't usually open up schools. But he decided a way that he could make a difference in the Akron, Ohio area, I believe, is to just go off and make your own school. And so he did that, and a bunch of kids are going there. And he if you haven't read anything about it, just like, you know, go read something about it because it seems incredible. I think what he did basically was sat down with a bunch of people and said, what do we need to do to make kids most likely to be successful in the future, you know? So like any possible problems that could get in a kid's way, he's already taken care of. Like they've got free busing for up to like 2 miles away from the school. So like, you know, if you were, you know, scared to walk to school or, you know, you couldn't get a ride, he's got that taken care of. Everybody's getting a bicycle and a helmet, and like parents are getting, you know, like GED coverage or whatever. So
Like, you know, if your parent had fallen on hard times and had to drop out, and that started a bad cycle, well, the parent can come learn when you're learning, and everybody's going to be better off for it. And, I mean, it really just seems like a great thing all around. Maybe I'm missing something because I haven't done all the investigation on his paperwork and all that stuff, but it certainly seems like a really great idea and a great concept, and, like, all the kids are going to go to college, like, on his dime, as long as they finish school and stuff like that. So good for him. For making the world a better place, especially because people are always like, you know, when athletes say something, they're always like, well, why don't you do something about it? So it's good to see somebody doing stuff that is tougher for people who yell, what are you doing about it, to deny. So good work on you, LeBron James.
Yeah, I mean, the tuition's free, uniform's free. Again, free tuition at University of Akron. You complete the program. They're going to have breakfast, which a lot of schools don't have breakfast. Especially like, I mean, I didn't have it when I was going to school. We didn't have that as an option. So, and again, kids get free bikes, you know, it looks like a great, great thing. And I'm a well-known LeBron, not hater, but strong disliker just because of the Boston thing. Sorry.
Right.
You know, I don't have anything against him personally, like I do against Kobe or anything, but you know, we're not going to get into that, but great choice for MVP. Speaking of things that are personal, I'm going to give it up. My MVP this week, the shot clock, it's coming in NCAA lacrosse. You can't stop it. Last ditch effort by a bunch of coaches from Team USA. Not going to work. We're going to have it. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. I hope it's like 90 seconds. I know people think it should be longer or whatever, but like imagine 90 seconds just like dictating everything you do. That's great. Let's do that. Okay? It's the nice proportional amount. It's akin to the shot clock in basketball being different in the pros than it is in college. Let's go with 90. Okay? Just get, not even touch the ball, not even get over the half. It solves all these clearing problems and it makes refereeing so much easier. You touch the ball, 90 seconds starts. There you go. Have fun. Good times. And again, this is the MLL podcast, so of course I feel that way. And if you feel differently, don't at me. All right. You can check me out and any of my further thoughts on the shot clock, which have, unlike a couple games here, gotten very spicy as of late, at TheKyleDevitt on Twitter and Instagram. Chris, where can people find you?
I'm at ChrisRosie22 on Twitter and at Chris Rosenthal on Instagram.
Thanks for checking out our podcast. Make sure to watch all the games this weekend. And, you know, good luck to your favorite team if they're still in the race. We'll see you next week.